Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, the Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. Now, yesterday I talked about the rogue presidency, a presidency running amok out of touch with its own party. And I'm not going to do it again today, because to do it every day will have you turn the show off, because you'll say, I know it's true, I can't hear it anymore. Because someone should stop the rogue president by impeaching him. So I'm not going to do that again, because I don't have to. The fact is, Obama got destroyed at the Supreme Court, one after the other. He's getting control, large and small. So that's where it's going to come down to, what it's going to come down to. Latest poll, Investors Business Daily, 59% blame Obama for the flood of illegal aliens coming over the border, the child crisis. They know he caused it. They say that 73% of Americans are following the story closely. They know that this administration did it. They also, by the way, in the IRS scandal, according to this poll, 65% believe that the IRS scandal is an attempt by Obama to hide evidence. So don't think people are that dumb. One other thing, which I'm not going to cover today, is his Iraq policy. It's been criticized by 55% of people who say that he's not honest when he claims that Iraq's prime minister was responsible for the decision to bring the troops home. They know he's a liar on that one. So the fact of the matter is, the American people are slowly, maybe too late, but slowly waking up to the rogue president. He's gotten destroyed at the Supreme Court. And another topic I'm not going to talk about is the attempts by the Anti-Christian Liberty Union, the ACLU, to break off the War Memorial Cross at Mount Soledad in San Diego. This is a huge case. For 20 years, I've been trying to tell you that the ACLU is an anti-Christian, anti-American, subversive organization, that if I were president, the first thing I would do is indict all of them for sedition. And every contributor to the ACLU would be investigated. Just as the IRS went after conservative groups, I would get the mailing list of those who contribute to the ACLU. I'd investigate them for ties to foreign and subversive organizations. But I'm nothing but a talk show host, which is why I'm not going to talk about the breaking of the cross off Mount Soledad. If you look at that War Memorial Cross, which I'm not going to talk about, you'll see a memory to many, many soldiers of all religions on this memorial. It's a huge cross, and yet the Anti-Christian Liberties Union is seeking to break it. Now listen, here's the part that kills me. The American Civil Liberties Union, representing a group of Jewish war veterans, says the cross must come down because it represents an unconstitutional endorsement of one religion. Are there any Jewish listeners who want this cross removed from Mount Soledad because it endorses Christianity? You realize, were it not for the crosses in graveyards around the world, the crosses of dead Christian soldiers, the Holocaust would have gone on around the world. You do know that, don't you? You ever look at the row of crosses in Normandy? Yeah, there's an occasional Star of David, but it's about 99.9% crosses. No symbols of Islam, no symbols of Buddhism, no symbols of Hinduism. 99.9% of dead boys who fought to liberate Europe and the world from Hitler. And yet we're supposed to believe that there are Jewish war veterans who want this cross removed at Mount Soledad? I ask any one of these Jewish listeners to stand up and be counted and speak before this audience and tell us why you want to break the cross off war memorials. Here's a phone number, 855-407-282, which I'm not going to talk about. I'm also not going to talk about the Hobby Lobby abortion deal, because you've heard it all day long. It was a big, big victory for everybody, because it means that you can now use your religious beliefs to get out of any one of Obama's crazy laws. That's a big one. So now you know why I'm not going to talk about this as well. He's Obama, the great healer, has told Israel not to destabilize the situation after the Hamas kidnappers butchered three Jewish boys and buried them under rocks. Obama said to Israel, don't destabilize the situation by going after Hamas. No, just eat some crack pie, which we'll be able to send you some crack pie over from the White House. Maybe they can get Netanyahu to eat the same crack pie they're eating in the White House. Maybe that'll help Netanyahu see the world through the eyes of Barack Obama. Because, I mean, I'm starting to think that the mayor from the Middle East, Midwest to the crack addict, no, to Toronto, sorry, Mayor Ford of Toronto, the crack addict who just came into rehab, I'm wondering if his chef is not cooking food for the White House. Because he's telling Israel not to destabilize the situation after Hamas murdered teens. A Hamas leader praised the kidnappers last week. Wait, here's one that'll make you sick. I'm not going to talk about it, though. One of the Muslim kidnappers' mothers said she's proud of him to my last day. I raised him on the knees of Islam. I don't know what it's going to take for you to wake up. One day you'll come to understand when there's a sword over your neck, you morons. Idiots! But I'm not going to talk about it. Play Desinfinado again before I lose my temper. I swore I wouldn't. I told my dog I would not lose my temper. He gets upset. My dog is my meter, my radio meter. If he gets upset, I realize listeners are getting upset. And if listeners get upset, they turn the radio off and they start listening to, I don't know, car ads. Underarm deodorant ads. They don't want to hear it. What they want to do is sling bags of newspaper bags of dog waste around in their hand. They think that that's a sign of a civilization. I'll tell you what I am going to talk about. Depression. That's right. Before you change that dial, I know you're depressive. That's why you're listening to radio in the middle of the day. Doesn't matter what your politics are. You're a depressive. And you're listening to me because I stimulate you, because you can hear energy. And the electronic energy that I transmit to your ears through the speaker literally gets you out of your depression. Even if you don't like my politics, you feel better. You come away feeling refreshed. You say, how the hell does this guy do it? I hear he's older than me. Where does he get the energy from? How does he do it? He's like a whirling dervish. What is he, a religious nut or what? Well, no, I'm not a religious nut. Sorry to say. I wish I were. I'd feel better. And the reason I'm going to talk about your depression is this. Have you learned how to channel your depression into action is my question. Why? Because I read that Robin Williams, the comedian, has gone into rehab. Now, the article is such a puff piece, it's worse than candy cotton for a diabetic. Listen to this garbage that Robin Williams is an all-around nice guy. How could you not like Robin Williams? He's a nice guy. But the story is such candy cotton that I have to read it to you. This is what passes for journalism today in the USA. Throw it away. Quote, after working back-to-back projects, Robin is simply taking the opportunity to fine-tune and focus on his continued commitment, of which he remains extremely proud. And he's spending a few weeks at a Minnesota rehab facility called Hazleton Addiction Treatment Center. And his presence in Middle America has caused a bit of a stir. He posed with fans at a Dairy Queen in Lindstrom, Minnesota, leading local news to wonder why he was in town. Oh, duh. For years, Robin Williams has been open about his issues with drugs and alcohol, and this go-round is no different. Sweet Tooth and All Rights, USA, throw it away. All right, so he's in rehab because he slipped. Nothing to joke about. Nothing to joke about. So here's the story. The man was clean. He cleaned up. Okay, doing fine. He goes back to television, does a sitcom. He needs the money, according to a story. Goes back to L.A. and falls back into the drug world or whatever he's on. This is all surmisal. I don't know the truth of any of this. In other words, he could not perform without the boost, is my guess. And I look at the story and I say, it's amazing. I do the show without anything, except one thing, which is my depression, which I've channeled. I learned how to channel my depression because of the world and life situations and my own blood chemistry when I was very young. I learned a long time ago, it's either sink or swim. I learned to swim, not to sink. You can let depression destroy you, or you can learn how to channel your depression into something positive. Of course, you can channel it into a lot of negative things at the same time, which I'm sure I still do, overeating occasionally, like James Gandolfini, I hope tomorrow isn't tomorrow isn't tomorrow. He's in a new movie, by the way. Wow. Saw the movie Enough Said last night. I love this movie, 2013. What a movie. This guy is such a great actor. He's not Tony Soprano in it. But he's almost better because the accent he uses in, I think it's called Enough Said. It's a funny movie. It was so good, I had a dream about the movie afterwards. That's how well written it was. So I'm saying you could overeat if you're depressed and do a Gandolfini over a table in Italy with a broken glass in front of your children, like Fat Tony Salerno at the end of the day, just from too much pasta fazool. Or you can do other things, I mean, if you're depressed. So this is the thing. I want to talk about how to overcome depression by asking you, have you learned how to channel your depression? What techniques do you use without drugs now? And by the way, if you're on antidepressants, do not call the show. It's not that I'm against them. I mean, I know what they do. I would never take them because I think they kill creativity. I think they turn you into a zomboid. Even if you're a conservative, you're a zombie. I mean, I'd rather be up and down than a flatliner, to be honest with you. To me, normal pathology is the worst. If you're a normal path, I don't want to know you. I'd rather talk to a manic depressive. I'd rather talk to someone who's manic-y one minute, depressive the next day. Someone who go. I mean, I'd rather have someone who's up and down. At least they're alive. I don't want to talk to I don't like normal paths. I never did. Normal paths and I don't get along. The world's filled with them. And now you have drug companies who are marketing normal pathology. Normal pathology, something you won't hear on another show. I mean, it's okay. I do my thing, they do their thing. If you want to just hear about contraceptives, Hobby Lobby, I think we'll go out and buy a model airplane from them or something. I don't even know what they sell. What do they sell, like crochet needles in a Hobby Lobby? I don't even know what they sell. But they're good groups, so therefore I'll go buy something. I'll buy airplane glue. I used to be an avid model builder as a child. Did you know that? Yeah. You know, if a kid made models today, there'd probably some nut job psychiatrist freako pervert who would say that a kid who stays home and makes models has OCD, and that he should be treated because all he does is build airplane models and ship models. He has obsessive compulsive disorder. He should be out there. He should be out there with the other kids experimenting with drugs and sex if he's a normal child. Isn't it a great world? Isn't it a great world? It's a wonderful world to see America going downhill like this with Captain O at the helm. Obama says the White House pies are so good you'd think there was crack in them. And then First Lady Michelle Obama had to jump in and say, oh, no, 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 there is no crack in our pies. Right. I wonder what that was about. It might, hey, we may be onto something here. We may be onto something here. So these are the topics I'm not going to talk about, and these are the topics I am talking about. If you care to comment on any of these topics, especially the depression one, but I see already I got a callers already I'm happy with. I can see they're smart. They're about depression. They're about the rogue presidency. They're about the cross. You know what I'm saying? And I'm in for a good show. I can feel it in my bones. I had good Chinese food a minute before the show, leftover from last night. I heated it up. It's percolating down in the boiler, and I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I, Michael Savage, trust to buy my gold and silver from, SwissAmerica.com. Yes, indeedy, ladies and gentlemen. Step right up, this way to the egress. This way to the one-breasted woman, the one-breasted man. Step right up to the freak show. Right here, get your Cracker Jacks. Right over here to the White House where the pies are so good you'd think there was crack in them. I swear, Obama said the White House pies are so good you'd think there was crack in them at an LGBT celebration. And the First Lady jumped on it. And said, no, there's no crack in our pipes. I mean, in our pie. Well, thank you for that clarification, Mrs. First Lady. It would explain an awful lot of the policies. Because I don't think that the Mayor Ford of Toronto could do a worse job than Obama. Could you imagine if Mayor Ford was the President of the United States? The decisions couldn't be more bizarre than what we're getting out of the White House. Virtually everything the man touches is wrong. Okay, I said I wouldn't do it. That's all. I'll back off. No. Back off. Play the ball game thing again. I loved it so much. I felt good for the first time all day. Summertime. That means summertime to me. I myself don't like ball games. Something about carnivals, freaks, circuses, midgets. I don't know. Disease fears. Ballpark, hot dogs, peanuts. I don't like the whole take it down. I usually leave after two innings. I'm the only guy who gets taken to a stop it already. I'm the only guy who gets taken to a Super Bowl and leaves after at halftime. No one else left the stadium. I couldn't take another second of it. That must have been a $12,000 seat. I couldn't take Beyonce. I thought she was so talentless. Looked like a bad strip show with Moog music. Nah, I didn't. It was nice. It's too much pageantry for me. I always fear I'm in the Roman Colosseum and I'm about to be thrown to the lions. That's what it comes down to. It's some ancestral fear. When I go to a large stadium and I hear like crowds, the madness of a crowd. There's a madness. You know, crowds are insane. Like a crowd is an entity, and a crowd can be driven one way or the other. And there's a deep animal fear within me somehow. I think, you know, some deep collective consciousness about Christians to the lions, whatever. And I have a fear in stadiums that like the sentries are going to come down and march me down to the and throw me in front to the hippopotamus in the middle. WABC Nathan, welcome to the Savage Nation. What's on your mind, Nathan?
Dr. Savage, I just wanted to make a comment on what you said with the Jews wanting to take off the cross from the wherever it is that they want to take off. I'm an Orthodox Jew, and I completely disagree with what they want to do. It's the liberal Jews, the reformed Jews. They would take off a Magen David if it was on the building.
Tell people, I agree with you 1,000%, and I'm very glad you called. I want the listeners to understand that the ACLU is hiding behind communist Jews when saying that they represent a group of Jewish war veterans who want to rip down the Mount Soledad cross. I happen to know that that's not true. I happen to know that it's Jewish communists who may have served in the war. It's not the Jews in general who would never, ever want to disrespect Christianity or the cross. That's my belief, Nathan, and I thank you for confirming that. Tell people what a mug and dove it is, because they don't know what it is.
Well, the Magen David is the symbol that which the Jews go by.
That's right. In other words, the Star of David. Mug and David. I could start singing right now. I could sing a Jewish song, a Christian song, a Hindu song, a Muslim song. But I'm not going to sing. I'm going to talk about depression and how you fight it. Did anyone call on this? I told you that many of you listen to me because I'm your personal crack pipe.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
We call Bill the Crustmaster because his pies, I don't know what he does, whether he puts crack in them or... but...
There is no crack in our pie.
That's before an LGBT crowd who thought they were on an in-joke, get it? He must put crack in our pies. They had a high old time there. I wonder what that was about. Was that a mistake, or is that a Rob Ford moment in the White House that they lifted the curtain on it? You never can tell. I mean, let's put it this way. We have no reason to assume the president uses drugs. However, even if he did, it's his business. It's a personal choice, isn't it? In the world we live in? I mean, it's his choice. Since it's legal in most states to do most anything that you want, why, what's the difference what the president does? His decisions reflect such rationality that it wouldn't matter. Look how intelligent the man is. Look at these great decisions. I mean, the Middle East is not on fire. We're not in a Cold War with Russia. The economy is not collapsed. They're not printing money around the clock. No. The decisions are super rational. That's the truth. By the way, you know when a dog gets rabies, they say he has hydrophobia. You've heard that, right? Hydrophobia, fear of water, right? Doesn't want to drink water. It dawned on me, my dog, my 10-pound poodle, is a hydrophilic. I came up with a new word. He has hydrophilia. He actually loves water. He jumps in the bay to try to rescue a deep swimmer. I swear to God, he's hydrophilic. My dog suffers from hydrophilia. What a dog this is. This dog is too much. I don't know what to do. I think about the inevitable. I don't want to think about it. Right now, as I broadcast, my little gray poodle is sleeping at my feet. I guess that's animal abuse or something. He should be, I guess, above me. According to PETA, he should be in a bed above me. But he's sleeping underneath the broadcast desk, and he's smiling. He has a smile on him like a porpoise. Because he knows that when I'm happy, I mean, I know that when he hears I'm happy on the radio, he smiles. And when I start yelling about the rogue presidency and the illegal swarm coming over the border, he kind of gets freaked out. I realize he is somewhat like an audience. He represents the emotional reaction of the audience in America that listens to me. Teddy, I got to thank you. I cannot pay you in enough greenies for your service to the Savage cause. So I have a hydrophilic dog. I have a wonderful audience. I have a summer coming up with nothing to do. No vacations, no plans, nothing. Everyone's going to be on the road this weekend. On the rogue this weekend. Everyone's going to be on the rogue this week. The word rogue won't leave my mind. Rogue presidency is very good. The rogue president. It's a good line. I know it'll be stolen. I'm shocked it hasn't been stolen yet. How come no one's lifted it from me yet? I'm such a persona non grata that even when I say something they want to steal, out of spite, they won't steal it now. How do you like that? How's that for frustration? They won't even steal these lines that are so good. That's really bad. Hydrophilic is good. Hydrophilic dog, hydrophilia, good. Good line. That should be on one of the comedy shows tonight from one of the junkies whose writers will steal that one. And I'm talking about how to channel depression. Because I learned how to channel depression maybe in my 30s. I realized that we either sink or swim, and I decided to swim. You can take your depression, and what you do is you turn it into anger. That's the first thing you do. You want me to give you the hint? First, you got to go through anger. You can then channel your anger into creativity, painting, whatever. See, here's the thing. The psychiatric profession has taught you that anger is bad. It's a negative emotion. That was the first step to deballing you. They told men in particular that their anger was no good. It was harmful. Wrong. Anger is the primary motive, the primary response of a male when he is frustrated. He becomes angry. That's his instincts kicking in. He's supposed to get angry. He's not supposed to hurt people necessarily, but he should be able to hurt people if it's necessary for him to survive. That's what the animal is doing. Do you understand it's fight or flight? So the whole psychiatric profession, because it wanted to feminize the male in America, taught you that anger is evil, and that if you're angry, there's something wrong with you, and you need anger therapy, you need this, you need that, you need drugs. That was all an attempt to turn you into something other than a male, a full-blooded male. And as a result, we have a wimp nation. The wimp nation. That's why 200,000 illegal alien children can be dumped on our border and no one does anything. It's unheard of that a country is invaded like this and the people don't stand up and say no. It's unheard of that a president takes liberties with our freedoms in a way that hasn't been done since the Stasi did it in Eastern Europe. The fascist secret police did what, you know, if the fascist secret police of Eastern Europe were doing what Obama was doing, they would have been much happier because he has more power over the people than they did. Obama has more power over the average person through the spying than the KGB ever dreamed of having. I don't even think that they would have permitted what he's doing to be done. And he could just tell jokes to the LGBT crowd, I guess, and the news media will eat it up. That's all. But I didn't want to go here. No, sorry, Bob. Would you rather talk about what's that one? No, I don't want to. The Mount Soledad Cross case gets me so angry that if a rotten, stinking lawyer in a black robe, meaning a filthy judge, says break it down, I'm making a commitment on this show right now. Mark it down. Call me a liar if I don't do it. The day they come to break the cross down, I will be there with 10,000 people. I will fight to keep that cross up. How's that? I don't go anywhere. I don't give any speeches. And I'm going to want 10,000 to 100,000 men and women to come down to San Diego to link arms with me and fight with the police if necessary and not let them break down the war memorial. This will be the last battle necessary to fight. If you let these communist perverts in the ACLU and their freaky lawyers in black robes do this to you without a fight, then you have no nation left. How's that? Did you write it down? That's a commitment of mine. I mean, barring some illness, okay? I'm not going to make up an illness. Barring some illness that prohibits me from traveling, I will be there. I'll announce it on the show and we'll go there. And I'll need 10,000 of you to come down there with me. And we'll link arms in circles. 20 circles linked arms, they're not taking down that cross. And I can guarantee you that message will be sent out to the entire world. A message they haven't seen come out of America in the last 100 years since the communists took over all aspects of this culture. How's that? Now, I didn't want to do this today. I didn't plan it. But I just made a commitment to it. It's that simple. What's even more galling to me is that the ACLU, which is the most subversive organization that ever existed in America, says they're representing a group of Jewish war veterans who want to rip the cross off the mountain, Mount Soledad in San Diego. Now, the Supreme Court declined to take up the Mount Soledad cross case yesterday, which is very sad. That's a very big mistake. It's a 20-year fight over the cross atop Mount Soledad in San Diego. You have to see this cross, because there's pictures of dead veterans on walls all around this, and yet these vermin in the ACLU want to break down this war memorial. And the U.S. Supreme Court refused to take up the case of the cross atop Mount Soledad in San Diego until it has been heard again by another appellate court. Well, I don't care who hears it. I don't care if God himself says break it down, because we're not going to let them break it down. If they can flood this country with illegal aliens and no one does anything, then we can have 100,000 men say, go ahead, make my day. Go ahead, make my day. Start shooting us because you're not touching that cross. And then we'll ask the police to join us. We'll ask the police to turn around on the punks with clubs and guns who want to take down the cross. And we'll see what happens. This will be the flashpoint that will either save America or will break America. I'm telling you, this is going to be it. I'm telling you, this is going to be it. This cross is it. This is the last symbol of America that I can see of. And if we, that I can see right now, and if we let them break off that cross, then we've lost the country forever. That's what I think. That's how I'll use my depression. That's how I'll use my anger. That's how I'll use my rage. I will turn it on the vermin who've destroyed my country with your help. How's that? That's a commitment. Now I'm stuck. Can't take it back. My entire career depends upon my living up to that statement. Okay? Keep me to it. All right, let's take some callers on all these topics on the Savage Nation. You see, I stepped into something I didn't intend to make that personal, but that's what happens when you get emotionally involved. And I'm emotionally involved in this show and the topics. It's not just an act for me. All right. I don't know which caller to take. John on WMAL, Washington, D.C., where the show is thriving. What's on your mind, John?
Dr. Savage, I'm a 28-year-old United States Army veteran of Iraq and Afghanistan, and I wanted to talk about the subject of depression. See, in my experience, depression is mostly masked with anger, but I've learned to do productive things. I've gotten a good job. I'm going to school, providing for my family. I also like to work out, and what's very therapeutic to me is to go out to the range and shoot guns.
Good, good. No, first of all, I want to thank you personally for your service to this nation for killing evildoers who would cut our throats and convert us to Islam. Let me be very clear. That's what the war was about, wasn't it?
No, I mean, it's...
Oh, well, that's what you would... No, you were told it wasn't by the PC leaders of your military. But it was about Islam's war against the West. Make no mistake about it.
Make
no mistake about it. It's Islam, just as it is now in the Middle East. It's Islam called ISIS trying to convert the whole damn world to Islam. What the hell do you think it's about?
It's about that. I mean, they made that.
Of course, that's what it's about. But the defense secretary told you not to even know who your enemy was. No wonder you came out angry. And if you did your job too well, they told you you were a Nazi. But if it wasn't for men like you, in this generation and the past generations, and hopefully in future generations, we're all going to be slaves. And thank you very much for calling the show. WMAL, Dan, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, Mike, I love your show. Got my kids listening to you, and my son read your book about a year ago.
Well, thank you very much. What's on your mind, Dan?
Well, I called about the cross, but I'd like to talk about the depression, how I deal with it, because I got a lot to be depressed about, but I won't give you the satisfaction of telling you. I read the Bible and I work out. I just finished all the prophets. I just finished Malachi last night, but I started with Isaiah and went through Malachi.
Well, these are all positive ways of dealing with depression, but I want to ask you something. Without, you said you don't want to give someone satisfaction in describing why you're depressed?
Yeah, because when we complain, half the people don't care and the other half are actually kind of glad.
Well, I'm curious, what is the number one reason for your depression?
Well, I blew my last 10 grand on a business deal. I should be on food stamps and disability. The house I'm in is been foreclosed on because I had to go to a bunch of funerals, family members. And I should be going to, I went to get health insurance. They said go to a doctor. But I'm not doing
you
that.
No, you, you have troubles, my friend.
Yeah, I do, but. If I was to...
None shall be weary nor stumble among them. None shall slumber nor sleep. None shall be weary nor stumble among them. And I give you the strength that you need. And I pray to God you continue to find it in the prophets, such as Isaiah. You can overcome anything. You can overcome virtually anything that is thrown at you. I'm not saying you want it, nor do I say that we invite it. But I say that once it comes, there's no ducking it. And you can overcome almost anything. It's that simple. 1-855-407-282 is the Savage Nation. Shall I do the dog thing again, the poem I wrote for yesterday that most people missed? Let me do it right when I come back. It's about old white men slinging bags of dog crap as a symbol of the decline of the West. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
You know, thankfully, we're far away from a lot of countries that don't even issue birth certificates to girls because they're so worthless, why record their births? So we're very far from that. But this kind of decision raises serious questions.
So there's the demagogue popping out from underneath the skirts of Hillary Clinton, implying that the Hobby Lobby decision is the equivalent of making women worthless. She can't help it. I mean, she didn't get where she is by not being a demagogue. And she thinks she's going to motivate the female voters on the contraception issue. I don't think so, frankly. But I don't want to talk about that. To me, it's an interesting but not that important issue right now. The decision was made. You've got religious beliefs. You can use it to stop the government from steamrolling you into the atheism that is prevailing in the country today in plain English. Now, I'm not going to get around to the old white men poem now because it's I don't have the time. I'll do it in the next hour. I want to take some calls on the tearing down of the cross by the communists and the atheists and my commitment to going down there should they decide to remove it because one stinking fetid judge who bought his black robes says, go ahead, break it down. I'm telling you, I'll be there with 10,000 of you or more. And we'll say, go ahead, come through us because there'll be 10 chains of us. And I want everyone to understand I'm going to stick to this. If I'm here, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it. WABC Lewis, welcome to the show.
Hi, Michael. Listen, before I get to the cross story, can you please get a life jacket for Teddy? Because from what I've seen on the Discovery Channel, he got a lot of sharks out there and seals that eat stuff, and I don't want Teddy to get hurt.
No, I know we thought about that. There's not really any sharks here in San Francisco Bay near where I live that I've seen. I thought about it. There could be. Seals don't eat poodle. Seals don't like poodle meat, I understand. They like fish. They like something with scales on them rather than fur. But I don't know. I could get a rogue seal who likes poodle meat. So what's on your mind today? No, gone already. He just told me not to worry about the dog if he jumps in the bay. I try to let him not jump in the bay. I try to have him not jump in the bay. Palestinian kidnapper's mother, who they found the boys in Israel butchered and buried under rocks. The mother said she's proud of him to my last day. She said, I raised him on the knees of Islam. If you people don't understand there's a war against civilization, as you know it, if you people don't understand that there are people on this planet who want to destroy our civilization and replace it with a 1,000-year-old retrograde civilization, if you even want to call it that, then I pity all of you. If you've bought hook, line, and sinker, then you're a moron. You're a bigger moron than I think you are. The mother of one of the Hamas kidnappers who kidnapped the Jewish boys and, well, I can't even read the story. The mother's proud of him. She's proud of him.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage. Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
I've sent a clear message to parents in these countries not to put their kids through this. I recently sent Vice President Biden to meet with Central American leaders and find ways to address the root causes of this crisis. Secretary Kerry will also be meeting with those leaders again tomorrow. With our international partners, we're taking new steps to go after the dangerous smugglers who are putting thousands of children's lives at risk.
Well, if we were to believe the president, he would give them a sandwich, a new set of clothing, and a few inoculations, even a $100 bill, and send them back to Guatemala and El Salvador. Now, I know many of you are afraid to acknowledge what I just said as the reality because you're afraid of being called a bigot. But I don't think it takes a bigot to love their country. I don't think it takes a bigot to say charity begins at home. I don't think it takes a bigot for America to stand up for its integrity through its borders, language, and culture. In fact, I would argue the opposite, and I would say that the president knows damn well that he created the crisis. He knows that no one believes him. He knows that every poll shows everyone looks right through him. They see that he's a charlatan, and they understand he created this crisis himself through very careful plans, because we've shown you the emails that were released last week, didn't make it to your local rag, I know that, which showed that HHS, Health and Human Services, was putting out an RFP in January for clothing and food for, I think it was at least 100,000 children that they knew were coming. This has been carefully orchestrated by the White House. It's an impeachable offense. Demand the emails, hold hearings, demand the emails, and put those in prison who planned this assault on our borders. It's that simple. Now, if we had an opposition party and a fair press, there'd be immediate hearings. The summer recess would be off. This would be an around-the-clock hearing. The emails would be nailed right now from HHS, DHS, executive, whatever. And you'd get the emails and find out who orchestrated this assault on our national sovereignty. And they would go to prison for it. But we don't live in a democracy anymore, do we? And I don't want to do this again. I did it yesterday. I got very excited. I was so agitated I could hardly sleep. I had to watch two movies last night, not just one. And I did. I mean, I watched a great movie. I forget the name of it. It was a great movie. God, I can't remember who was in it. Let me think. It was like, I told you in the beginning of last hour. My favorite actor died last year from overeating. Gandolfini, and he's in a situation comedy. He plays a divorced husband in L.A., and he meets a masseuse who's also divorced. They're middle-aged, and they have a little affair. And as it turns out, the masseuse, who's played by Kathleen Kinner, who's very good, is like a famous poet, for whatever that means in America today. You know, for 2 cents, everyone's a famous poet. You know, but anyway, she plays a famous L.A. poet who divorced someone, and she keeps complaining about her ex-husband as she's getting a massage to this masseuse who she doesn't know is dating her ex-husband, Albert, who's played by Gandolfini. It's brilliantly written. It was so well written. I enjoyed it so much that I actually dreamed I was talking to the female who wrote wrote and directed the show. I actually had a dream at the end of the morning. I would have stayed in bed another 2 hours, but the dog woke me up to go out. It was already 9 a.m, which for me is 3 hours later. I didn't even drink last night. I had such a pleasant dream from that movie that I had a conversation with the director, writer of the movie. And I was saying, listen to this, I was in a house in L.A. in the dream, and there was a big barbecue going on downstairs on the lawn, like a big one. And she and I were talking, and she said, well, you want to all go out to dinner? I said, no, I don't want to go out in L.A. in Beverly Hills and see all the people from Queens looking for movie stars. And I looked at her and said with a kind of a smirky grin, I said, why don't we go down here on the lawn and go to the barbecue and see people from Queens looking for movie stars? And she laughed. I thought it was a funny line. So it shows you that, I mean, I had such a good time watching the movie that I was writing funny lines to myself, postcards to myself inside my own my own head. Where does creativity come from? Can anyone in this audience explain that to me? How can I be so creative? How is it possible? How is it possible for a human mind to produce 24 hours a day for all these years without burning out a circuit? Which leads me back to one of the main topics. which is depression. I've used my depression, which is both systemic within me, from childhood, from ancestral memories, from, I don't want to go into details, from various and sundry. And I realized at a certain point, it was when I was in my 30s, when I had very, very serious issues with this subject. And I realized then it was sink or swim. But I had two young children, and I became quite religious at that time when I realized that I don't own myself. See, it's the opposite of what you are taught today by this atheistic fallen society of ours. We're all taught that if it feels good, do it. And we're all taught that we own ourselves. We don't own ourselves. God owns us. We are owned by God, and we have no right to take what is God's property. That's your body. Now, the day you come to understand that is the day you'll be liberated from your own impulses. It's a very complicated statement that I just made. By giving yourself up to ownership by God, you actually liberate yourself from all of your negative impulses. It's very hard for an atheist to understand that. It's paradoxical for a person who fights for freedom, as I do within himself every day, to even believe that, but I do. So that's what saved me. I found out that suicide is prohibited in my religion. I found that it's prohibited because we, in plain English, make it simple for children. Why is suicide prohibited in my religion? Because God created us. Only God can take us. That's it. That's the whole story. Don't give me a philosophy now and 80,000 books on the subject. That's it. That's the story. Make it simple. Sometimes simple is good. When I was afraid of death when I was a little boy and I didn't know what death was, I went to my grandmother's funeral. I was five. I looked at everyone crying, and I didn't know what to make of it. I came home, and I said to my mother, "Ma, what's death?" And she looked at me after her mother's funeral, and she wiped away the tears, and she said with a smile, she said, "Well, I don't know, but no one's ever come back to complain." Well, that worked for me. I've told young parents that in this day. They love hearing it because no one teaches them anything. You think young parents know how to talk about death with their children? They don't. I don't blame them. No one teaches them anything. Instead, they take a pill or this and that or go and do Pilates. Well, that's wonderful to take a pill or do Pilates, but that's not going to help your child when the child says to you, "Mom, what's death?" Try my mother's humor. Just say, "Well, I don't know, but no one's ever come back to complain. Now go out and play." You see what I'm saying? There's simple answers sometimes that work for us. And that's what you have to remember. Now, coming back to the topic that I wanted to talk about today, on the show, not about the rogue president, not about him saying there's crack in his pies in the White House, not me saying that the crack mayor of Toronto, Rob Ford, couldn't make crazier decisions than Obama has been making in the last number of years. Doesn't matter whether he's using crack or not, he may as well be using crack for his decision making. I don't care if he's just eating apple pies, decisions look like they're on crack. But having said that, I don't want to talk about that. I'd rather talk about depression, how you overcome it. So before I do that, I promised something in the last hour, and I'm going to do it. In addition to talking about the vermin who want to crack the cross off, the Christian cross atop Mount Soledad, and the commitment I made to bring 10,000 people there to stop the police from breaking it down, if they ever get the signal from a judge in the Ninth Circuit to do it, and the Supreme Court won't hear it, I'm bringing 10,000 or more people down there. I will be there, God willing. We'll link arms in concentric circles, and we will fight the police who try to break down the cross. We will not be passive. How's that? Does that work for you? Is that simple? If the police are willing to let illegal aliens run across the border, but the police be willing to shoot you to protect the cross, then the police are worthless. How's that? Then they're the enemy, not the friend. But we'll have to see what happens on that day. We'll see if the police will answer to the atheist, anti-Christian Civil Liberties Union, the atheists who hate Christians, or they will answer to the American people and the memory of the war dead. Now, having said that, now I don't even want to read the poem. It doesn't fit right now. I'm trying to. It doesn't fit. I can't do it. I did it yesterday. How do you fight depression? It was a question in the last hour. That was a big question. I told you I've channeled my depression first into anger, and then you take the anger and then you channel the anger into something else. Do you understand that? That anger can be channeled into anything you want it to be. Running, weightlifting, singing, dancing, playing the piano, painting, writing poetry, going into business and beating your enemies. You see, depression is a power. It's not a weakness. And the day you medicate that power, you defeat yourself. you have to understand that it's a power. It's a power that you can use. I've used it for four decades now. I've used it. It drives me. It drives me, it really does. I mean, look how creative I am. I'm sitting here in my radio studio, and I'm right now compiling. Let me tell you another story. We're approaching the summer, so I can slow down the pace a little bit. I can't sit and worry every second whether someone's going to switch a dial and listen to a ball game or listen to me. So just listen to me. I'm sitting here in my radio studio in the San Francisco area, and for the last couple of months, I've been compiling all of my archives going back to 1960s, early 60s. I have all my journals. I have all my radio tapes from 1994 on, would you believe it? Some on audio cassette, and I've had someone compiling the archives for years, different people. They're all compiled, over 100 pages of written notes of the best parts of my radio shows. Then I have movies, the standard Super 8, 8mm movies going back to when I was a kid, all the way through the collecting years in Fiji, the Fiji Islands, Tonga, Samoa, Marquesas, collecting plants with the family when the kids were young, me in the jungles, this and that, and miscellaneous and sundry things associated with the writing and the written career. So I told you last week that I was looking for a university home for my archives. And I told you that I found one, which I have, and I can't mention what it is yet because I haven't, let us say, gone to that level. But I have a written note that it's going to be at a home. And it's not going to be in California. They're not getting it. Berkeley couldn't get it if they paid me $50 million. They can't have it. Let them collect the LGBT archives from Polk Street and the Castro District. All they want. God bless them. If that's what they want to become exclusively, good luck to them. They'll be known for that. No, my archives will be going to a state that respects my position and respects what I've created. And I've worked that out. But the point I'm making is I'm looking back on all of my productivity. And I'm saying to myself, how the heck did I do all of this given my shaky start in life? Given my shaky beginnings as a youngster, my shaky beginnings as a writer, how did it end up with such a vast assemblage of written and spoken word? So the answer is, my friends, written in the wind. I don't know. How's that? I do know this. All I know is that you can channel yourself in any direction you want. As Henry Miller wrote, I think in Black Spring, as I awaken each morning, my life goes out before me in a thousand different, my feet go in a thousand different directions. Well written. Paraphrase, not as good as his writing. But that's right. You can wake up in the morning and your feet can take you in a thousand different directions. You know, afternoon, here's one that I remember from the ancient Jewish writings, from when I was spending too much time drinking too much wine in cafes, when I was deflected from my career by the liberal vermin who put affirmative action in the place of genius and hired morons instead of Michael Savage, which of course is why our universities are such cesspools now. Take a look at the courses they teach, except in some rarefied alum. Take a look at what's teaching. Every day, a professor of this study, professor of that study, professors, full professor. But, I just got distracted by my AOL. You've got mail in the middle of a show. I didn't hit the button, the delete button. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I, Michael Savage, trust to buy my gold and silver from, SwissAmerica.com. We are talking about how to fight depression. We are talking about the rogue presidency. We're talking about the cross atop Mount Soledad. We are talking about the flood of illegal aliens being brought over the border by Obama and his minions pretending they're not doing it. And we're talking about the situation in Israel, which is extremely unstable, and how Obama has the nerve to lecture Netanyahu not to make it more unstable after the three boys were kidnapped, tortured, mutilated, and thrown under a pile of rocks in the West Bank by the Islamist separatists and the Islamist supremacists in the PLO, in the Hamas organization. Is another topic. And we're talking also on a trivial note about a movie I love called Enough Said with James Gandolfini, his last movie. He's great in the movie, if you like them in The Sopranos. I mean, the movie's amazing. He plays some role. It's funny how his accent is like that of the character when he is dying in The Sopranos. Yeah, many of you don't watch The Sopranos. He's dying and he has a dream he's another person. This is the other person he dreams he is. It's funny. You know, I like Catherine Keener. She's terrific. And Julia Louis-Dreyfus is a pretty good as a sneaky bad woman. The masseuse, she looks like a creepy little masseuse from L.A. in it. Totally schlepping the bed up steps. Right? Like a big, big bed with a strap going up the steps to give the massage. Okay, let's go to the callers. Dennis on WABC, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, Michael. My depression is I'm up in the Catskills on vacation, and my dog died a month ago. I used to come up here. I bought York Lake property for him to swim in, and I had another 3 years for him. But
oh, man, that's a heartbreak. It's a killer. How old was he?
He was 12, lung cancer.
And what kind of dog was he?
Golden Retriever.
It's funny, you say lung cancer right away. You say in the person, they say, what did he smoke, right? You can't say that with the dog.
Yeah, no, I know.
No, see, this is the thing about epidemiology, is that it's not as cut and dried as people think. A dog gets lung cancer, too. It never smoked a cigarette. So what's the situation? You're asking how to grieve with the dog? I mean, what do you do?
Dog, but every time I go get one, I just get too emotional. So I'm gonna...
Well, here's the thing. There's no getting over a lost pet that you've had for that number of years. The last dog that died of mine, she was a Sheltie that grew up when the kids were young, and she was like a little lassie, and I remember her jumping over fences with me when she was young. I can remember it to this day like a Kodachrome. And then all of a sudden, the last scene is the kids have grown up. She's 11 or 12. I had to give her away because she was near death in a doctor. Someone said she has to be put to sleep. I said, I'll put you to sleep first. I'm not putting her to sleep. So through someone I know, we gave it to some very lovely people up in Sonoma country area, right? And she lived another 2 years. They put her on a diet because I overfed her. I eat a lot, so I give her. Whatever I eat, I gave her. She lost 40 pounds. She lived two more years. I saw her the last day of her life. They told me the time was coming. I can't even do it. I talked to her, and I saw the light go out of her eye. You know, it's killing. It's killing. I saw the light go out of her eye on the grass. Would you believe it? As I whistled to her, she knew who I was. It's a heartbreaker. I mean, if you love dogs, what are you going to do?
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Michael Savage.
Either they're crazy or totally insane. Most people who are legitimate and sane, though, go into politics.
On Hot Talk 560 KSFO.
And I saw her the last day of her life. I went up there. They said the time has come. She's going to die. So I went up there, and she was laying on the grass in the shade, and her eyes were dim. And I started to whistle to her the way I used to whistle to my brother. And I saw her eyes sparkle because she knew it was me. You know, you have a special whistle with a dog. And I talked to her. I told her, blah, 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 you know, and she died. So I said I'd never get another dog. I can't take this up and down heartbreak with animals. Well, lo and behold, Teddy was brought into my life. And I'm so in love with this little character. I don't know how a dog could have such a personality. It's hard to understand. Unless you understand the animals, and I don't care what the animal is that you're relating to, and believe America's in love with animals, I don't have to tell you that. You have to understand, I mean, they have a spark of divinity in them. I know that religious people don't believe that. But I'm one who believes in reincarnation because I'm very spiritual, and I believe animals are reincarnated beings, human beings in many ways. I'm positive. I'm almost 100% sure of it. Well, let's put it this way. I want to believe that. In other words, if I believe in reincarnation, we can come back as a cockroach or a worm or a bug or a Democrat. There's no reason to believe we can't come back as a dog or a cat. So I call him by a certain relative's name sometimes, and I think he acknowledges it. What do I know? Sometimes you have to play with reality, too. You know, you don't know, you do know. What's the difference? If it makes you feel good, do it. Who am I hurting? So now I got him now, little character, 10 years old, you know, TikTok. And I can't go through another one. I just can't. It's too much. It's too much. But those of you who lost human beings is another story. And we all have. We're all going to die. I mean, I don't want to get you depressed, but, you know, you can push off that knowledge all you want. But the fact is, everyone listening to the show has lost somebody in their life. And you have to deal with that from the human level. I mean, what do you do with a human? You can't replace him by going to a pet store. So what are you going to do? But the depression is the issue. But that's what makes the world go round. If you listen to the great songs of, I would have to say, in the past decades, not this filth and garbage that passes for music today. You listen to most of the songs, they're about depression, whether they're blues songs, A Girl Who Left, or He Wanted a Woman. All of the great blues songs are all about love and loss. What is that all about? So the blues musician, what's that about? He's channeling his depression. That's where the great music came from. So now let's go back to Mozart's Requiem as an example. Where'd that come from? He wrote the Requiem in honor of his father, didn't he, Neil? That's what the Requiem was written for. You want to get the Requiem for me? You want to make everyone break the whole audience down in the whole country? I'll have every car stop with people crying on the roadside. If I get into what Mozart's Requiem was about, you'll understand the tragedy of human existence. But I'll tell you something. There's a power in recognizing that. See, I'm a little counterintuitive in regards to dealing with things like this. We're all told, don't dwell on it, don't think about it, don't think about death, don't think about this. You know, it's like that school of thought of be positive. I don't believe in the be positive school of thought. I don't believe it produces any more than being negative. There's another way to approach life, which is not to be so positive about everything. You know, how to win friends and influence people. That's a 50s thing. How to win friends and influence people. Always have a smile. Always talk about how good things are. They're con men. Politicians are con men with big teeth, big white fake teeth from, you know, certain. But you can also be like a depressed personality and also get to the truth. I mean, and you take any doctor who's around death, you think they're happy people? What a profession that is. Or a nurse who was dealing with it every second of her professional life. What is she going to go home happy now and go to a party? Maybe she does, but maybe she doesn't. You know, she can't detach only, she can detach only so much. Say, they teach young doctors or young nurses, don't emotionally relate to the patient. All right, well, some can do it and some can't. Some couldn't emotionally relate even if they wanted. And others emotionally relate for their whole careers, because that's why they became a doctor or a nurse. So, you know, you can't overgeneralize about this. What is this? Play it loud, though. I want to see if I can hear it. I think I'm going deaf. Just for a minute. I want to dwell on Music Appreciation 101 here. Are you sure this is Mozart's Requiem? Oh, but it's the Requiem in D boring. It's not the part that moves me. I'd rather get to the starting part. Get to the fast part. Moving up to the fast part. No, I got to get to the part that someone might recognize, not the fast part. I listened to Bach's Brandenburg and Shadows last week. I'd tell you the truth, I had tears in my eyes for 4 hours listening to it. I don't mean I was sitting there crying like a baby, but it is so purging to listen to great music in an age of such mediocrity. You want to talk about depression? Think about the mediocrity that passes for art in America today. Think about the lowlifes in high places if you really want to get depressed. So then you go back to the great literature, the great music, the great science, the great poetry, the great art, and you can get inspired. That's another method of dealing with it, isn't it? Is great music and great art. I go to a museum as often as maybe once a month. That's all. But if I'm around great paintings, something happens inside of me. You can't do the same thing on the internet. You got to be in front of the canvas. You got to see the brush strokes. You got to see the oil strokes. You got to see the brush marks. I stood next to last Wednesday. I went to the De Young Museum, and I stood next to a Picasso. And there was no glass on it. The painting was worth what? $300 million? Maybe $300 million. I don't know what it was worth. There was no glass in front of it. And I stood in front of it, and I talked to the museum guard. I said, this is amazing. I said, how do you guys live with such tension, not knowing if a nut's coming along? The minute I said it, I realized he probably thought I was the nut who was going to slash it. But I couldn't take it back at that point. I started a conversation about a nut who might slash a painting. When I realized he was looking at me, he probably figured I was the nut who was going to slash it. Then I realized I couldn't take it back. So I was stuck trying to, like, over-rationalize what I just said to show him I wasn't really nuts. It was an interesting little subtext of a story I could write one day. I didn't slash the painting. It's an interesting observation, like, is it within the within? I remember once standing in front of Van Gogh. It's in one of my journals from the 1980s that I was going through. I can't find it. If I'm not mistaken, it was in one of the brocaded journals. I can almost picture it in one of the Chinese journals that I bought, Chinese covers that were popular in that time. They were coming in from China. And I was spending a lot of time in the museums at that time and in cafes writing, because I had gotten my PhD and they wouldn't hire me because I was a white male and I wasn't stupid enough to get a job, nor dumb enough to get a job. So I was ejected from the academy before I even started. They had to make room for the illegitimate to take over the universities. So I was in the museum. We had a roving Van Gogh collection from New York. I know it's Van Gogh, but I had to say Van Gogh. I'm from the Bronx. I'm not going to say Van Gogh to show you how knowledgeable I am. We had a Van Gogh's. And Van Gogh was on the go, and one particular picture that Van Gogh had painted stands out in my mind to this day, and it was a self-portrait. Again, small, no glass, stand next to it for any period of time, and you'll find your mind swirling. The painting itself can produce an almost psychedelic effect in your mind if you stand close enough to it and you're focused enough on the painting. And then you could feel Van Gogh's madness as he was painting a self-portrait. That's what I'm trying to get at. It was a transcendental experience standing in front of the Van Gogh. The brushstrokes themselves were able to move your brainwaves. That's what I'm trying to say to you. Now, you're not going to read this in an art history book. I'm not reading from an art history book. And I'm off script in the sense of topic-wise, because these are some of the subjects that motivate me greatly, and it is deeply connected to the main topic of depression and how you deal with it. Van Gogh was an extremely depressed individual who was also one of the world's greatest artists. Had he been diagnosed as a, quote, bipolar, I'm sorry, sir, your brother Theo is a bipolar. We're going to take him these pills, and then a few months he'll feel better. And you never would have seen a painting. Schmendrick would have worked for the French Postal Service. It would have taken a job as a stockbroker. Instead, he painted his depression onto the canvas. That's all. Well, I mean, do you understand what I'm saying to you? That's what you do. You take your feelings and you work them out. Ask any artist what he's doing. The deeper the feelings, the better the art. That's the paradox of an artist, which is why there's so much drug use amongst artists, by the way, is because they can only cope so long on their art and on their ability to transfer their feelings to the canvas or to the written page. Only so far can they do that, and then they revert back to their, they fall back into their well of loneliness. And they revert to drugs. And then that's the cycle. I mean, I don't have any cure for that one. That's what rehab is for. And, you know, God bless the rehab community. I know nothing about it other than it doesn't work. It's a temporary fix. It's just temporary. That's all there is. It's just not a permanent fix. Rehab is a racket. I'm sorry to say that to you. Maybe some of you disagree with me. But rehab is an industry. It's an industry as much as the drug dealing is an industry. The rehab industry is an industry. It's not a permanent cure. The permanent cure for that aching soul is to fill the soul with something meaningful. And the only way to fill that soul with something meaningful is not through rehab. Maybe that's the first step, but it's not the last step. You know, the permanent step is finding out why your soul is empty and recognizing that it's probably because you are a narcissist who thinks you're God. And once you realize you're not not God and you're part of something much bigger than yourself, then maybe you have a chance, as the religious people do, of feeling whole. Did I make any sense to any of you out there? WABC Charles, how do you fight depression?
Yes, sir. Good morning. Good afternoon. I'll tell everybody how I handle depression. After listening to you, I get so pissed off at these feckless politicians that I get nervous and I have to go to the gym. And I got to pump iron for 3 hours. And then after that, I go to New Jersey, I take my plane up to get off this earth.
Ah, oh, you go to Teterboro?
No, I have a small plane I keep in New Jersey.
No, because I know there's a jetport at Teterboro. It's an interesting airport. What kind of plane do you fly? What model?
No, I have a 210. It's a complex aircraft, and I have all these gauges, and I have to communicate, and I feel like I'm accomplishing something.
No, you are, though. No, I get it. I like the idea of the gauges. It focuses you. I got rid of my boat a year ago, but I would use my boat in the same manner. 40 tons of boat on the bay. You had to focus totally because you could kill yourself and someone else. Boating is not that easy, you know, Charles, in crowded waters. And I had a big boat, and I used to love to go out because I found no matter what was on my mind, at the time I had very severe legal problems because of an evil person who was trying to destroy me. I would go on that boat, and it would leave my mind for those hours that I was on the boat driving it. Right. I had to drive it, though. I just couldn't sit in the chair and let someone else drive it.
Right, I had to do it myself. I'm 63 years old, and if I'm going to get to if I'm going to be too old to fly the plane, I got to get a boat next. Because I got to do something. If I was younger, I wish I can start a revolution or something. You know, I guess.
Okay, okay, that's not a bad one. Listen, if we go to defend the cross at Mount Soledad, maybe you can fly over with some water balloons.
Right.
Charles, God bless you for going on the show. That's funny. Yes, indeedy. Here we are. Enough said. That's the name of that movie, by the way, that I mentioned. I'm not pushing it. Just I love Gandolfini as an actor. He was so diverse. And he plays a totally different role in The Sopranos. You know, he's like a kind of nice, schmendrick, fat guy living in L.A. He was divorced. And he kind of has an affair with a masseuse, a sneaky little masseuse, Julius Louis-Dreyfus. And then she finds out that it's her creepy friend's ex-husband. And the creepy friend keeps telling her about her ex-husband. And the creepy friend poisons, played by Catherine Kinnear, poisons the relationship because she starts to pick up on all the negatives in this guy. It's so well written. So the writer is Nicole Holofcener. I never heard of her. She's amazing. Amazing. The brains of some people. How they can. I couldn't do that. I could never write a script like that. It's so hard to write a screenplay that holds itself together. You know, it's very difficult. Unbelievable to me. That's good. Goofs. When Ellen is painting Eve's toenails in the first shot, both of Eve's feet are flat on the floor, and the next her legs are crossed. Look what people will look, the nitpick. You ever go to IMDb and look at the things people write? This is what they do in their life. Is that goofs in the movie? That's their whole reason to be, is they go on IMDb and find a mistake in a movie, like they do with the radio show. Oh, yeah, I was listening. No, he's not so smart. You know what he said at 212 the other day? No. Oh, he said that. Oh, he's not as smart as you think. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
So, guy calls up God, and he says to him, God, listen, I'm depressed. God says, look, I don't have time for it. I got a busy universe to run. What's your problem, man? What are you depressed about? And the guy starts to tell God all of his troubles. I said, look, this is so, let me give you an answer to that one. Okay, you ready for this? This is God talking now, okay? So put down your iPhone and listen. If you take a stick and you put it into dog do, no matter how you push the stick around, it's still dog do, okay? Now get out of my sight. So the guy was cured of his depression. That's from an actual conversation with a religious man. Guy went to a religious, it was a rabbi a guy went to. The guy thought he was depressed and he was suicidal. And this rabbi was a tough old dude who had been a boxer before becoming a rabbi, not one of these weakling, little sponge cake eater types. A tough pugilist, became a rabbi later in his life. So he was a very wise street, from the street. So the guy just tells him his whole life story, what's wrong with him, this, and then I'm depressed, and then. The guy listens to him and he says, listen, mister, the Torah says if you take a stick and you put it into dog you know what, no matter which way you push the stick around, it's still dog you know what. Okay? Now leave me alone. And he threw him out of the office. The guy's depression was cured. Another, you don't have to be so nice to everyone just because they say they're depressed. That's all. Tell them to stop breaking your, you know, wasting my time with your headache. Half the world, 90% of the world, is starving to death or being bombed by the Islamo-fascists. And you're sitting and complaining about something. Do you watch your bacon wasn't cooked right in the restaurant last night? Is there a soccer game I should know about? Hot dogs versus the mussels? Hot dogs versus the mussels. That's what's going on in the World Cup. It's the Savage Nation. Be here or be nowhere, infidels.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE. 855-400-7282. Savage. Warning. The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
What a great day I'm having. What a great day I'm having.
I just got this email called Moving to Mexico, and it goes like this. Dear Mr. Obama, Senate, and Congress, I'm planning to move my family and extended family into Mexico for my health, and I would like to ask you to assist me, Mr. Obama and others. We're planning to walk across the border from the U.S. into Mexico, and we'll need your help to make a few arrangements. We plan to skip all the legal stuff, like visas, passports, immigration quotas, and laws. I'm sure they handle those things the same way you do here. So would you mind telling your buddy, the president of Mexico, that I'm on my way over? Please let him know that I will be expecting the following. 1, free medical care for my entire family. 2, English-speaking government bureaucrats for all services I might need, whether I use them or not. 3, please print all Mexican government forms in English. 4, I want my grandkids to be taught Spanish by English-speaking bilingual teachers. 5, tell their schools they need to include classes on American culture and history. 6, I want my grandkids to see the American flag on one of the flagpoles at their school. 7, please plan to feed my grandkids at school for both breakfast and lunch for free. 8, I will need a local Mexican driver's license so I can get easy access to government services. 9, I do plan to get a car and drive in Mexico, but I don't plan to purchase car insurance, and I probably won't make any special effort to learn local traffic laws. 10, in case one of the Mexican police officers does not get the memo from their president to leave me alone, please be sure that every patrol car has at least one English-speaking officer. 11, I plan to fly the U.S. flag from my housetop, put U.S. flag decals on my car, and have a gigantic celebration on July 4th. I do not want any complaints or negative comments from the Mexican locals. 12, I would also like to have a nice job without paying any taxes or have any labor or tax laws enforced on any business I may start. 13, please have the president tell all the Mexican people to be extremely nice and never say critical things about me or my family or about the strain we might place on the Mexican economy. 14, I expect to receive free food stamps. 15, naturally I'll expect free rent subsidies. 16, I'll need income tax credits so that although I don't pay Mexican taxes, I'll receive money from the government. 17, please arrange it so that the Mexican government pays $4,500 to help me buy a new car. Oh, yes, Mr. Obama, I almost forgot. Please tell Mexico to enroll me free into the Mexican Social Security program so that I'll get a monthly income in retirement. I know this is an easy request, Mr. Obama, because you already do all of these things for all of his people who walk over to the U.S. from Mexico. I'm sure that the president of Mexico won't mind returning the favor if you ask him nicely. A listener just sent that to me, and it says, do you see how stupid this looks when you put it in writing? P.S., Mr. Obama, please be sure to include my need for a free cell phone and a swimming pool at my subsidized housing. Yours truly, an American planning on moving to Mexico. I think you ought to send that to Nancy Pelosi. Maybe she can help you pay for it. 855-400-7282. In the last hour, we were talking about depression and how to fight it. There's a lot of reason for depression, given the individual that we have ruining the country. But there's a lot of personal reasons for depression, and all of us have to cope with it one way or the other. CJ from KSFO, how do you cope with depression? Go ahead, please.
Thank you, Michael. But what helps me a lot is to regard my mind as a biocomputer, garbage in, garbage out. And it's super important for me to program my mind, because if I don't, it'll go off in negativity. My directions to my mind have to be direct and clear, especially in the morning. I have to put first things first, which is spiritual, and then read something or do affirmations or something to be grateful for in the morning, and then program my mind to look for that which is beautiful, maybe a flower, a smile, have God help me do that. So it's being grateful helps me get out of depression. You were talking about how so many people, you know, are suffering in the world. When I look around, I can see that I have eyes. I can sit down. I'm not in the hospital. But it's being aware that I'm not my mind or my emotions, and that I have to program.
You know, I hear you very clearly. That's very, very interesting. 20 years ago or so, or 25 years ago, I won an award from the Japan Creativity Society for some of my work, which I won't go into. And I went over to Tokyo to get the award. And I met a very interesting Japanese gentleman who was the head of the Japan Creativity Society. And every morning, the guy weighed about 95 pounds. Every morning, the man would play. He stayed in my house. That's right. He came back over here once to visit me. And I would listen to him playing German marching music in the morning in his room. So I said to him, Yukio, why are you playing German music if you're Japanese? And he said to me, because it stimulates me for the rest of the day. And he thought that the creative mind required such stimulation, as you're saying, to program it. In other words, there are people who get up in the morning and they read the Bible. And they feel that that keeps them going all day long. They have a positive outlook. They don't let negativity get at them. Then there are the people who wake up, they have a cigarette, and they watch pornography. And then they do things with themselves, and they wonder why they're depressed all day. You know what I'm saying? You can set the day off on a low road, or you can set it off on a high road.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the mind has to be trained to look for things that are positive and to write things down that I'm grateful for. But it's funny, my mind gets programmed when I write things out so I know what my goals are. And, you know, I work backwards. I'm starting to learn this, Michael, the work backwards. How do I want to feel at the end of the day when I climb into bed? And then work backwards to the beginning of the day and say, well, what do I have to do today in order to feel good? And
you. Well, I agree with you. You see, I'm lucky because I have a radio show that runs 3 hours a day, right? So from the minute I wake up until the show starts, until the show is over, is probably 8 hours or 10 hours, right? I've absorbed most of the waking hours, the productive hours, by the time the show is over. My problem begins at 3 o'clock on the West Coast when the show ends. I still have 9 hours to go to fill in, and that's the trouble hour. Those are the troubled hours.
Well, what helps me is if I can do something for someone else and not get found out about it, or I can look out to see who needs something, maybe a smile, maybe just a little thing, or I can get out of my head. See, my head is puts me in a bad neighborhood, especially I would suspect that'd be true for you, given the negativity that you're ensconced in. You know,
this is awful. Looking at what Obama's doing to the country and the rise of Islamofascism around the world while he's literally, you know, there's a word for it. What do you call somebody? He's an enabler. By not fighting them, he's enabling them. Do you agree with me on a political level, CJ?
Totally, totally. But the thing that I found for me is that the answer is spiritual. I cannot...
All right, listen, did you ever use antidepressants, the drugs?
No.
No, you didn't have to give in to them.
No.
All right, your answer is spiritual, and I absolutely respect that. Totally. Totally. That's all. 855-407-282, that's the topic that people seem to be reacting to. Let's go back to New York City from KSFO. We moved to WABC in New York. Brad, tell me your tricks.
My trick is to go to work. My work takes my mind off my anxieties and depression. Hanging out with my pet takes a lot of stress off of my depression. Listening to good music. Relying on my sense of humor and finding humor in everyday life and mundane things, and listening to you, like gets me to, those things are the main things that help me deal with.
A lot of people have said to me that I'm sort of an antidepressant for them, and yet I bring up such negative topics because of the negativity in the world. So where do I help people who might be given to a depression fight it?
Personally, I don't believe in ignorance is bliss. I got to know what's going on in the world.
I feel. That's exactly how I feel. I mean, I could ignore it, and then where is that going to lead me? I'm going to be the average joker walking around with a bag of dog crap in his hand? That's what I'm saying. That's why I wrote that poem about old white men slinging bags. Did you hear that poem yesterday by any chance?
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
Yeah, because I saw these old white guys. They're not bad guys, but it's because of men like them that the world is on fire, and a charlatan like Obama could get away with what he gets away with. Thanks for that call. In fact, Neil, play a little of the jazz music, and I'll talk about old white men slinging bags of you-know-what. All right, so old white men slinging bags of dog crap, young Muslims slinging Kalashnikovs, old white men who no longer believe in Jesus and his gentle message, young bloodthirsty Muslims who do believe in Allah's thirsty vision of conquest, old white men who scan the morning news to see how evil they are, young Muslims who read their holy book calling for holy war, old white men whose guilt elected a double agent, young Muslims whose fanatical belief in conquest through bloodlust
tell me who wins this game. Music by Sam Gendel. Music by Sam Gendel. By the way, Sam's the saxophonist behind that. And he's coming up to the Bay Area, God, on the 25th, I think, that weekend with some filmmakers from New York, some young guys. They're going to run a video of me walking through the city of San Francisco with my commentary, and then they're going to put a music score behind it, which is going to be interesting. It's going to be all ad-lib, this whole little thing, and they're going to put it up on YouTube. We're not even going to sell it. No, we're not doing it for a buck, you know what I'm saying? I said, well, what are you going to do it for? He said, well, whatever. He wrote me a long, interesting letter about the different generations and how I inspire him and things like that. So it's going to be interesting. We're going to walk through North Beach, my views, Chinatown, probably the financial district I might get to. So if you see me around town with a couple of guys with cameras, don't say hello, because I hope you don't see me. I'd rather you not know where I'm going to be, know what I look like. There will be a no symbol, no signs of me being walking in the streets. Well, my friends, this is the Savage Nation. We've been talking about all these topics that I said we wouldn't be talking about, but I did make a deep commitment today on the tearing down the cross at Mount Soledad, and I'm going to stick to my word, because one thing my father taught me is a man is only as good as his word. And so if the day comes that the Ninth Circuit Court of Schlemiel's or another appellate court says tear it down, if I have enough notice, and I'm sure I will announce it on this radio show. I will organize as many thousands of you as I can to meet me down there. We will link our arms in concentric circles. If we can get 10,000 men, we will do so, and we will not let the police near the cross. It's that simple. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282.
Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I, Michael Savage, trust to buy my gold and silver from, SwissAmerica.com. You're living through remarkable times, where the Supreme Court is rebuking the rogue president almost weekly now. It's a rebuke to the president over religious freedoms, the abortifacient mandate, the rule that required Christians to fund abortion-inducing drugs and chemicals for employees. They didn't want to do it. They took it all the way to the Supreme Court. This is a huge win for people of religious conscience. And a stern slap in the wrist for Obama and his radical leftist cohorts like Kathleen Sebelius, who overstepped their authority and told people, you know, we'll do what we want. Last week it was 9-0 over his overreach. Now Obama is going to do it again and again and again. And the people are going to revolt at some point. There's going to be something that provokes something's going to happen. There's only so much that people can take of a madman. I do believe this is no longer, I don't even believe this is a man who has a rational purpose in what he's doing other than a malicious purpose. Let me redefine what I just said. I don't even think he cares that much about these things. He cares more about being malicious. I think this is the mark of a power madman rather than it is about even an ideologue, because even a left-wing ideologue is still a politician who needs the people to back him, and he needs the other party to work with. And even a smart left-wing ideologue will seek compromise to get his agenda through. That's the nature of a democracy. But when you have a malicious president who simply gets off on doing what he wants, no matter what anyone says, in fact, gets off on doing it because they don't like it, because the people hate it, because the people are gagging on it, because the people can't take it anymore, you have to say to yourself, who is this man? Why is he doing this? It's not because it's his agenda. It's because he likes defying the people. He enjoys it. And this is the danger we're in, because where does this end? He's got years left. He's young and he's strong. Now he gets rebuked on the religious freedom thing, and it's a big deal. Now we have the borders being punctured by Obama. This has been proven over and over again. For those of you who've read the paperwork, back in January, DHS and HHS were giving out RFPs, request for proposals, to feed and house these 90, 100,000, 200,000 illegal aliens. They planned the whole thing. You talk about the IRS emails, what a joke that is. What a dirty joke that is.
she can't find her emails and there's no servers around to be searched? Hey, the next time you have to pay your taxes, why don't you tell the IRS you lost your paperwork and your computer crashed so you destroyed the hard drive? See what they say to you. See how long that would work. They tell you, well, we can get it from your server. Well, you can get the IRS emails from Lower Than Us Learner. Lower Than Us Learner is going to jail. Lower Than Us Learner is hiding. Lower Than Us Learner is the worst sort of bureaucrat. Lower Than Us Learner belonged in the ex-Soviet Union. Lower Than Us Learner should be found out for what she is and put in prison for violating the law. She targeted individuals based on their politics. That is so anti-American. It's against everything this country stands for. And yet Lower Than Us Learner said that her, oh, the computer crashed. Okay, we'll get it off the hard drive. Sorry, we destroyed the hard drive. Okay, so go to the server. We don't know who the servers are. You must be joking. Now, at the same time, we read last week that the FBI is reviewing 80,000 emails of Rupert Murdoch of Fox News in order to crucify him while they're blackmailing him politically. Now, if they could get the 80,000 emails from Murdoch off his servers, which is where they got him, why can't they get her emails off servers, the same FBI? Okay, I'll let you figure that one out. But I'll put it another way. Again, when the tax time comes around and you say, oh, I lost my paperwork. I don't have the receipts. I don't know where the papers went. My computer crashed and we destroyed the hard drive. See what will happen to you. See what they tell you. So that's why I say we have a rogue presidency. This is not an imperial presidency. Totally different. Watch your definitions. An imperial presidency implies certain things. A rogue presidency implies others. It's my definition. Steal it if you will. Steal this idea. I know you will anyway.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now. 855-400-SAVAGE. 855-400-7282.
Hot Talk 560.
I swear, Obama said the White House pies are so good, you'd think there was crack in them at an LGBT celebration. And the first lady jumped on it and said, no, there's no crack in our pipes. I mean, in our pie. Well, thank you for that clarification, Mrs. First Lady. It would explain an awful lot of the policies. Because I don't think that the Mayor Ford of Toronto could do a worse job than Obama. Could you imagine if Mayor Ford was the President of the United States? The decisions couldn't be more bizarre than what we're getting out of the White House. Virtually everything the man touches is wrong. Okay, I said I wouldn't do it. That's all. I'll back off. No. Back off. Play the ball game thing again. I loved it so much. I felt good for the first time all day. Summertime. That means summertime to me. I myself don't like ball games. Something about carnivals, freaks, circuses, midgets. I don't know. Disease fears. Ballpark, hot dogs, peanuts. I don't like the whole... Take it down. I usually leave after two innings. I'm the only guy who gets taken to a... Stop it already. I'm the only guy who gets taken to a Super Bowl and leaves at halftime. No one else left the stadium. I couldn't take another second of it. That must have been a $12,000 seat. I couldn't take Beyonce. I thought she was so talentless. Looked like a bad strip show with Moog music. Nah, I didn't... It's too much pageantry for me. I always fear I'm in the Roman Colosseum and I'm about to be thrown to the lions. That's what it comes down to. It's some ancestral fear. When I go to a large stadium and I hear, like, crowds, the madness of a crowd, there's a madness. You know, crowds are insane. Like, a crowd is an entity. And a crowd can be driven one way or the other. And there's a deep animal fear within me somehow. I think, you know, some deep collective consciousness about Christians to the lions, whatever. And I have a fear in stadiums that the sentries are going to come down and march me down to the, and throw me in front to the hippopotamus in the middle. The fact is Obama got destroyed at the Supreme Court. One after the other, he's getting controlled large and small. So that's where it's going to come down to, what it's going to come down to. Latest poll, Investors Business Daily, 59% blame Obama for the flood of illegal aliens coming over the border, the child crisis. They know he caused it. They say that 73% of Americans are following the story closely. They know that this administration did it. They also, by the way, in the IRS scandal, according to this poll, 65% believe that the IRS scandal is an attempt by Obama to hide evidence. So don't think people are that dumb. One other thing is his Iraq policy. It's been criticized by 55% percent of people who say that he's not honest when he claims that Iraq's prime minister was responsible for the decision to bring the troops home. They know he's a liar on that one. So the fact of the matter is the American people are slowly, maybe too late, but slowly waking up to the rogue president. He's gotten destroyed at the Supreme Court. And another topic is the attempts by the Anti-Christian Liberty Union, the ACLU, to break off the War Memorial Cross at Mount Soledad in San Diego. This is a huge case. For 20 years, I've been trying to tell you that the ACLU is an anti-Christian, anti-American, subversive organization that if I were president, the first thing I would do is indict all of them for sedition. And every contributor to the ACLU would be investigated. Just as the IRS went after conservative groups, I would get the mailing list of those who contributed to the ACLU. I'd investigate them for ties to foreign and subversive organizations. If you look at that War Memorial Cross, you'll see a memory to many, many soldiers of all religions on this memorial. It's a huge cross, and yet the Anti-Christian Liberties Union is seeking to break it. Now listen, here's the part that kills me. The American Civil Liberties Union, representing a group of Jewish war veterans, says the cross must come down because it represents an unconstitutional endorsement of one religion. Are there any Jewish listeners who want this cross removed from Mount Soledad because it endorses Christianity? You realize were it not for the crosses in graveyards around the world, the crosses of dead Christian soldiers, the Holocaust would have gone on around the world. You do know that, don't you? You ever look at the row of crosses in Normandy? Yeah, there's an occasional Star of David. But it's about 99.9% crosses. No symbols of Islam, no symbols of Buddhism, no symbols of Hinduism. 99.9% of dead boys who fought to liberate Europe and the world from Hitler. And yet we're supposed to believe that there are Jewish war veterans who want this cross removed at Mount Soledad. Here's a phone number, 855-407-282, which I'm not going to talk about. It was a big, big victory for everybody because it means that you can now use your religious beliefs to get out of any one of Obama's crazy laws. That's a big one. He's Obama, the great healer, has told Israel not to destabilize the situation after the Hamas kidnappers butchered three Jewish boys and buried them under rocks. Obama said to Israel, don't destabilize the situation by going after Hamas. How could ISIS, so-called, notice they gave this most vicious Nazi terrorist group in history a new name. Notice they came up with a new sort of friendly acronym overnight. Who came up with ISIS? Who invented it? Who invented the name ISIS? What does that mean? That's because you say ice, it seems good. Icicles, ice cream, it has good connotations, ISIS. How often have you heard ISIS, bloodthirsty, cutting off heads, blowing up churches? You don't see that. All you see from the idiots in the press is the advancement of ISIS. ISIS, ISIS this, ISIS that. Well, how did this happen so quickly? How in the world did they gain so much territory so quickly? You want to study this? You can study this. All you got to do is look at what Obama did, and you can put two and three together and come up with 17. That's right. He pulled the troops out, and suddenly they popped up. And they're so vicious. They're so vicious that even Al-Qaeda is afraid of them. And yet these are the same people that were fighting Assad in Syria that McCain has been calling for weapons for a year now. Old dummy McCain. Old McCain, the warmonger. The warmonger was saying we should fund the rebels in Syria. Well, these are the rebels in Syria. We should give them weapons. Well, we didn't, at least not overtly. We gave them weapons covertly, according to many sources. But now they have tanks, which they seized out of Iraq and Humvees. So McCain got what he wanted without having to send them over. Think about that. In many ways, it's a very green way of delivering lethal weapons to Islamists. You just let them steal them from America after you leave them behind on the battlefield. So why did we leave the battlefield? Why didn't we leave a contingency force of 50,000 men? Why were 50,000 men not left there to protect the institutions of government? We're still in Germany. The Nazis lost World War II in 1945. We're still in Germany. Why? Because there's always a fear that the Nazis could come back. We still have a troop presence in Germany. Did you know that? The war's been over since 1945, and we're still there. But in Iraq, he pulled everyone out? Okay, look, now it's too much for me. I'm telling you the truth. I'm blowing up from it. The rogue presidency is reaching a crescendo. It can't go on much longer. The rogue presidency cannot do any much more damage, and yet it will. The border crisis is the key to it all. And when I see Nancy Pelosi going to the border and saying what she said, I was livid with anger. And my headline on my website is Pelosi commits sedition. She said the border's a race for all Americans. It's a community, she said, with a border running through it. Do you know what she just said? There is no border. A sane nation would impeach any member of Congress who does a thing like this. We don't have a sane nation. We have an insane nation. We have evidence that the Chinese are trafficking teens over the U.S. border, mixed in with the Hondurans and Guatemalan children, as slave labor. Chinese teens being sent across America as slave labor. China's sending them in. So how many Islamists are coming in on the border? How many? You don't know. And, you know, Nancy goes there and says, oh, it's a divinity, a spark of divinity. Oh, God, I don't know how I take it. Honestly, don't know how I take it. Every day I got to look at this. I feel like an oncologist who's been studying a cancer patient, trying to not cure the cancer, but control the cancer, and the cancer is now out of control. The cancer has metastasized. The cancer of liberalism has so metastasized through the body politic that it's tempting for me to just give it up and walk away from it and say the patient's dead. That's all. I feel like giving up and saying the patient is dead. Liberals killed America. ISIS declares creation of Islamic State for the Muslims everywhere. I want you to take a look at the map they drew. Go look at michaelsavage.com. If you think they're kidding, they show the entire continent of Africa, all of Arabia, all of Turkey. They show Spain. They show the Balkan states. And they show Russia in their state of the new Islamic nation for the Muslims everywhere. Now, what kind of people would not understand how dangerous they are and how amazing this is that in a short period of time, this unknown group can take over so much territory? They certainly didn't conquer Spain and, of course, Europe, nor Turkey, comma, yet, period. But they could. What's to stop them? Palestinians kidnapped three young Israeli boys 2 weeks ago. The gentle, loving, peace-loving Palestinians kidnapped these three Israeli boys. They were found butchered, hidden under rocks in the West Bank. I blame their deaths on you liberals. All you Jew-hating liberals have the deaths of these boys on your conscience. But you know, it means nothing to you because you have no conscience. If you had a conscience, you wouldn't be a leftist to begin with. Not at all. Three boys kidnapped, tortured, butchered, and thrown under rocks in the West Bank by your Palestinians. So there's a lot more to be said, and I'm not the one to say it all. I'm just going to say as much as I feel I can say at any one time. It's only a radio show. I have no power whatsoever. I am just simply a member of the unelected commentary crowd. I'm a commentator. I'm one man's opinion. That's all it is. I have no power. I don't have any worry. Who represents me? There's a couple of senators I respect, two congressmen I respect. I have no representation in the state of California. It's been taken over by the radical communist left a long time ago, and they were put in largely by the votes of the illegal aliens. I can almost prove it. They don't represent the people of California because even liberal Democrats don't like Feinstein and Pelosi. They don't like them. They hate their issue of immigration. They hate it because they're smart enough to know that they're going to drive them out of their own state. Not directly, not going to come in and take their houses away, but the social services that are required for the illegal aliens will drive even the liberal out of his own house. They understand that. The liberal's not stupid. The rational liberal understands there's only a certain amount of money to go around. Who's going to pay for these 200,000, 20 million, 60 million illegal aliens and all of their families? Who's going to pay for them? They will. Higher property taxes. The hospitals will be inundated. The schools will be destroyed and decimated. Who's going to pay for it? They will. So a lot of these libs live in houses they bought in the 70s and 80s. They have no mortgage. They pay very low taxes because of the proposition that Prop 13. They're living on a reverse mortgage and Social Security. And they understand that even their reverse mortgage and Social Security payments have a limitation. And they can't stand Pelosi's pandering to the third world. They can't stand Feinstein. They can't stand Boxer. They can't stand the entire Democrat machine. You don't understand this. I do. I live here.
I'll be right back. It's the Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
We call Bill the Crustmaster because his pies, I don't know what he does, whether he puts crack in them or... but...
There is no crack in our
mind. That's before an LGBT crowd who thought they were on an in-joke, get it? He must put crack in our pies. They had a high old time there. I wonder what that was about. Was that a mistake, or is that a Rob Ford moment in the White House that they lifted the curtain on it? You never can tell. I mean, let's put it this way. We have no reason to assume the president uses drugs. However, even if he did, it's his business. It's a personal choice, isn't it? In the world we live in, I mean, it's his choice. Since it's legal in most states to do most anything that you want, why, what's the difference what the president does? His decisions reflect such rationality that it wouldn't matter. Look how intelligent the man is. Look at these great decisions. I mean, the Middle East is not on fire. We're not in a Cold War with Russia. The economy is not collapsed. They're not printing money around the clock. No. The decisions are super rational. That's the truth. By the way, you know when a dog gets rabies, they say he has hydrophobia. You've heard that, right? Hydrophobia, fear of water, right? Doesn't want to drink water. It dawned on me, my dog, my 10-pound poodle, is a hydrophilic. Came up with a new word. He has hydrophilia. He actually loves water. He jumps in the bay to try to rescue a deep swimmer. I swear to God, he's hydrophilic. My dog suffers from hydrophilia. What a dog this is. This dog is too much. I don't know what to do. I think about the inevitable. I don't want to think about it. Right now, as I broadcast, my little gray poodle is sleeping at my feet. I guess that's animal abuse or something. He should be, I guess, above me. According to PETA, he should be in a bed above me. But he's sleeping underneath the broadcast desk, and he's smiling. He has a smile on him like a porpoise. Because he knows that when I'm happy, I mean, I know that when he hears I'm happy on the radio, he smiles. And when I start yelling about the rogue presidency and the illegal swarm coming over the border, he kind of gets freaked out. I realize he is somewhat like an audience. He represents the emotional reaction of the audience in America that listens to me. Teddy, I got to thank you. I cannot pay you in enough greenies for your service to the Savage cause. So I have a hydrophilic dog. I have a wonderful audience. I have a summer coming up with nothing to do. No vacations, no plans, nothing. Everyone's going to be on the road this weekend. On the rogue this weekend. Everyone's going to be on the rogue this weekend. The word rogue won't leave my mind. Rogue presidency is very good. The rogue president. It's a good line. I know it'll be stolen. I'm shocked it hasn't been stolen yet. How come no one's lifted it from me yet? I'm such a persona non grata that even when I say something they want to steal, out of spite they won't steal it now. How do you like that? How's that for frustration? They won't even steal these lines that are so good. That's really bad. Hydrophilic is good. Hydrophilic dog, hydrophilia, good. Good line. That should be on one of the comedy shows tonight from one of the junkies.
Savage.